Blog Talk Radio.
It's showtime.
Greetings and welcome to CAGDU, about your dog and you. And CAGDU stands for Capital Area Guide Dog Users, Inc. It's a show about a blind person that use service dogs that increase their production in life and every day how dogs help a blind person achieve things that they never thought they can achieve. And that's fun, that's family, even foolishness, but also pride. So welcome to CAGDU, about your dog and you. Greetings, and I'm going to, all right, Miss Renee. And how are you today, Miss Renee?
I'm great. I just want to know, have you been able to pick up my Christmas present yet?
Well, Miss Renee, cut the music for a minute, because I want you to hear this. I want you to hear this. Cut the music.
I'm cutting it, sir.
I couldn't get the Michael Jackson 5 up personally because they're not together anymore. But anyway, that Santa Claus is coming to town. And I like the part about, have you been naughty or nice? So, Miss Renee, have you been naughty or nice?
I have been very nice.
All righty. So your present is definitely in Amazon on the way. Now you know that it's going to take a little time, right? Because you know they're delivering the vaccine, and they didn't hire extra people for the different places and stuff. So you just wait on this thing, okay? I got it in the mail for you, all right? Don't ask me what it is, because you know we have staff policy about how much we can give a person, but we don't be influencing them about other things, right? Okay, so we would discuss. So after the new year, when everybody opened up their gifts, and some of the people that be coming back to work, and there'll be people that won't be coming back to work, so we'll discuss it then. So, Ms. Renee, with that in mind, please tell us, give us a rundown on our show today.
Well, we always begin with stop dogging us around, the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a guide dog. And our guest is Jack Turner, a longtime friend of yours. He's a retired business owner. And we talk about a lot of things here on this show, and one of the things we have never talked about is what happens when you lose a dog, not when you retire a dog, but how you lose a dog and how he copes. And then in our second half, we look into Charlie's Corner. So back over to you, Reverend Ray.
All righty. Thank you. And as you say, we like to start the show with stop dogging us around. And the good, the bad, the ugly of having a guide dog. At this point, I always say the good is that the dog gets you out of the house at least 3 or 4 times and give you exercise and all. But I just want to give a tip with this holiday. A lot of people love their dogs. Yes. And I think we have our guest on the phone. I don't know if anybody loves his dog more than anybody. Especially had the resources to show how much he loved his dog, and we'll touch on some of that. But please, as you decide the kind of things to purchase for your dog during Christmas, please be mindful that they are still dogs, and there's some of the things that you are going to get them. And one of our sponsors, which is the Big Bad Wolf that they sponsor. They have a lot of different toys and treats and stuff for holiday that you can purchase for your dog. So go to some of the more reputable places like PetSmart or like Chewy. But, but check out those places, and the foods that you feed your dog. Please do not get a dog something from your dish when you're eating and you think you're giving them a special treat by handing them some of a turkey leg with that bone to splint and go in their throat and kill them, or some of that fattening, greasy sweet potatoes with 1,000 calories or sugar in it, or that macaroni and cheese with some people have 7 different types of cheeses and stuff. That stuff is not good for the dog. All right, so please be mindful. Be mindful. After the holiday, we have so many instances where dogs and stuff are going to the vet because of some of the things they've been given by their well-to-do, meaningful, loving masters. Okay, so please. And that is brought to you by the Big Bad Wolf. And you'll get more information on that. So, Ms. Renee, at that point, then I'd like to turn it over to you to introduce our guest, part two.
Part two, absolutely. Well, our guest is Jack Turner, and Jack Turner was on last week's show, and he proved to be so interesting and have so much to say that we decided we needed to bring him back for Jack Turner Part 2. Now, we have a tacit agreement with Reverend Ray that we are not going to talk about anything they did at the Maryland School for the Blind because most of it is not suitable for radio. So, again, we have talked at CAGDU, we have talked about many things related to working dogs, and just as Reverend Ray mentioned about the foods that we need to give our dogs, and we talk about their care and their training, but we're going to talk about the end of a working dog's life. But before we get started, we want to say hello to Jack again. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Brother Jack.
Good afternoon to both of you, Miss Renee, and you there, Reverend.
Right here. Hey, Jack, let me ask you a question.
If I had
stood up in assembly with all the other brothers and they said, pick somebody in this group that would end up being a minister, what number would you have chose me?
Well, how many people were in the group?
That's
first.
That's what I thought, Jack. Okay.
So if there were 100 people in the group, then I would have picked you as number 200.
Hey, Jack, I was telling Renee that they told me somebody had told me that they was at an event, and somebody said, you know, Ray Razor is a minister now? And they said, oh, no, but they said, yeah, he's a reverend. They said, oh, I know I got to get my life straight now.
Yeah. But, you know, I tell you now, in all sincerity, when you get older, your perspective changes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have evolved in a lot of ways as I age and experience things. So to be fair and totally honest, I'm not really surprised that you became a minister, really.
Okay.
Some of the stories that I heard from the school. But we're going to get right into our interview. You know, and Jack, we had touched a little bit about you being in the STAND program. That's what they used to call it. And
right.
You talked a little bit about how you got into that line of work. Tell us a little bit about how you got into it, what your career was like, because it was before you had a guide dog, correct?
Yeah, correct. Actually, I didn't get my dog until after I retired.
Okay.
Jack, look, before you get in that, let me ask you this, though, and then you can get in that.
Sure.
How different would it been, I mean, because I know, you know, I was in the stand program and used the dog and the stuff.
Right.
So how different would it have been for you if you had a dog while you was in the program? In terms, because I don't know how you went back and forth to work and you know, and all that stuff. How different would it have been for you if you had a dog while you was working? Because you were working like 40-some years, right?
Almost 44 years.
Yeah,
I did almost 44 years, yeah.
Right.
Actually, it wouldn't have made a lot of difference because I had transportation back and forth to work, and I still had good vision until the mid 90s. So I didn't even use a cane until the mid 90s. So I didn't really have a strong need for a dog as it relates to mobility. To kind of touch on what Renee was saying. Mm-hmm. So as I said to you guys, after I got engaged, I knew I had to get some serious employment. So I started in the program August 1st, 68. The time that I started, there were no real strong federal regulations. They were more state and local regulations. So the agencies pretty much did whatever they wanted. I mean, they made the rules, they made the policies, and you did what you were told if you wanted to stay around.
Yeah.
So from 68 to 74, I endeared all of the inequities and symptomatic racism, or systemic racism, and all of the unfair treatment. But at that point, I had made a commitment to a female, and where I come from and how I grew up. Once you do that, it's your responsibility to take care of her. It's your responsibility to take care of your family. So I dealt with all of the aforementioned challenges until 74. Now, in 1974, they were called the 74 Amendments, which were new federal guidelines. And they gave the operators a lot of protection, a lot of input, and total control of their location, pretty much. Well, I say this with all due respect. I let it be known who I truly was at that point. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about on steroids. So, because
now, Jack, was that also when they had the blind business committee? Was that?
Well, that was part of the 74 Amendments.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Prior to the 74 Amendments, there were no committees.
Right. Right.
So that was all.
And
part
Jack,
of that.
Can you explain to people who are not familiar with the? In some states, it's called the STAND program. In some places, it's called the Vendors program. But can you give us an idea of the scope, what the program was about, and who it was designed to benefit?
Well, the program was it was meant to be an entrepreneurial program for blind individuals. However, it didn't become entrepreneurial until, as I said, after the 74 Amendments. And once that happened, though, it was a great program. Now, everybody has their opinion, but it it allowed me to live a good life. It allowed me to raise a daughter from my first marriage. Should I be pausing here?
Should you be? Yes, you should be pausing there. That's what we're
talking about.
That's
when
Reverend
Ray
paid the bill. That's
when
Reverend
Ray
paid
the bill. And he makes Renee's end of the year bonus money. All right. So you obviously need to Cag Do. About your dog.
So we'll bump
up. Cag Do stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for guide dog users everywhere. Back over to our host and our special guest, Jack Turner, retired business owner who's telling us about the vendor program.
Yeah. And Jack, and I just want to say, you're right, I was in the vendor program for, 30-some years.
Yeah,
and
I remember when you were in the program.
Yeah, right, 37. And it does afford you a decent living. I mean, matter of fact, within the blind community and probably the disability community, as a group of people, the blind vendors of the elite, because we have money coming in our hands every day. Then one person always say, well, yeah, we get sales every day, but maybe not necessary profit. But it is pretty profitable in a lot of situations. And I do think also learning a lot of things and having a decent life in the business program. And although now I know a lot of our sisters and brothers are really hurting because the program we didn't explain is mandated that is in government facilities as well as some local facilities. And I know along the way, Jack Turner was fortunate enough, and he'll tell us about that, that he had he did so well, Renee, where he was at, somebody reached out to him to open up a facility in a sort of private location, didn't they, Jack?
Yeah, I had two private locations.
Oh, no, what are you buying a new Mercedes? I didn't realize you had two. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I had two private locations. I had I had one in city county building, it's called here, which is an opportunity. Well, what happens is you have to bid on it, like any other person.
Right.
So I was able to do that successfully, and after I had those two locations, then a private company approached me and wanted me to run their food service program. So at one point I had three operations going. And
wow.
But again, as I started to say, it allowed me to and I'm going to try to say this as gently as I can. It allowed me to live well. And it allowed me to take care of a family, to raise a daughter, to send my daughter to private school, to send her, she's a Harvard graduate. You know, now I know I did better financially than most, but some of that was luck, and some of it was skill and hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me say this. No matter how good you are at what you do, you also need a little bit of luck along the way.
Yes.
Because, you know, life happens.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Life
mm-hmm.
happens. And you have to respond to that when it does. And sometimes, just to give you an example, I had a location in a bank, and in 1979, the bank administration decided that they wanted the vice president wanted one of his golf buddies to have that location. So at the end of my contract, they told me they weren't going to renew. You know, it was a political move, but, you know, life happens. So, okay, I had just bought a new house in 1977. This was 2 years later. My daughter was attending Friends School, which was costing me a lot of money every year. And I'm like, okay, so now what do I do? So what I did was I got creative. I knew I would get another location as soon as one became available here. But in the meantime, I needed money immediately. So I became a DJ. I bought some equipment, and I already had a lot of music anyway. So I bought some equipment, became a DJ, and I was pretty good at it. Got a lot of gigs, and ended up getting some permanent ones at some local clubs. And so I supplemented my income via DJing until I got another location, and I actually worked both for multiple years. I DJed Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights.
Along with working my
vending job.
Let me ask this question. Jack, your normal cadence, you paused at the wrong places, and you said that you had opened up this facility at the bank. I was hoping you weren't going to say you decided to rob the bank. That's what I was like, wait a minute, where is he going with this story?
No, never crossed my mind.
Let me ask you this, though, because, I mean, I know how hard it is to run a facility. So how in the world was you DJing at night and getting – how many people – you had some people working for you during the day?
I had people working for me.
How in the world you DJ at night and get up 4-5 o'clock in the morning and go to work?
I used to come home at 2 o'clock in the morning, get up at 6 and go to work.
Wow.
What? Well, let me give you my schedule, a couple days schedule. On Thursday nights, I had to be at the club at 8 o'clock. I worked until 2. Came home, slept till 6, got up, went to work, left work about 2:30, because I would always leave early on Thursdays and Fridays. Left work about 2:30, came home, took a nap until 6, got up, had dinner, showered, dressed, and out the door, back to work. That was my schedule from about 81 to 92.
Let me ask this part then. Wait a minute, Renee, because I want to ask you. So you were very heavily involved with NFB. What years was that? And that takes a lot from you.
Yeah, that was I think I got really involved in NFB about 98.
About
98. 97, 98.
But you know, Jack, what I hear, we oftentimes hear the sacrifices that mothers make. And since I'm a woman, I'm more familiar with mothers' stories. But what I hear from you is the story of a father that did what he had to do, sacrificed what he needed to do to take care of his family. And that's always gratifying to hear a father doing that. I grew up in the Midwest, and that's what dads did. They worked in the factories. They worked on the line in the Ford Motor Company or U.S. Steel. But oftentimes they had second jobs You should call them hustles back then, but now they call it the gig economy to keep mm-hmm. their family together. Well, let me ask you this. What you had, you've given us one example of what your work life taught you, that it takes luck and that it takes skill. But what other lessons has your work life taught you?
Well, one of the early lessons that I learned is, let me say this. I was born a blind man with an attitude. That's what my parents used to say all the time. A blind man with attitude. And those two things don't work too well together. So one of the first things that work taught me was you got to cool your attitude, because you don't get to your job is to please the customer, not the customer please you. And if you want that person to return and offer you more of their dollars, you've got to please them. And in order to please a customer, you can't have attitude. So that's one of the first things I learned. One of the hard things I learned is no matter how well you treat an employee, eventually they will steal from you. So it's mandatory that you check on everybody all the time. And look, it's a lot easier to steal from a blind person than it is a sighted person.
Yeah.
Now when I say steal from you, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not particularly saying that they go into your cash register and take your money or walk out the door with a can of soup I'm not necessarily saying that. There are multiple ways that employees steal from you. And, you know, they ignore portions. When their friends come along, they give them double. Give them double. So there are multiple ways. And you have to be sharp enough as a blind person to be able to detect that without being able to actually see it.
Exactly.
So, and that's a level of skill that has to be learned, because you don't walk in the door with that.
And a story along that, Renee, I'll tell you that, Renee, what people used to come in to ask
for a person
to pick their sandwich.
we had a sandwich maker that everybody wanted Mr. Larry to fix his sandwich. And
we thought
at first it was sort of nice, and then we began to realize that Mr. Larry was being very nice to our customers. And again, you know, I came out of education, so working in a business was very brand new for me. And so you don't realize how small your margins are. You know, another half ounce or a pound of meat on a sandwich that calls for 7 to 9 ounces cuts into your margins. So I learned it in I probably had a master's class in business. I just did not realize how many moving parts and how much you do have to be aware of those kinds of things. So you're absolutely right. We're right up against the break, but I want you to think about this question as we go to break. Do you have any favorite stories from your work life? And we'll hear the answer to that.
Okay.
All righty. So this is Reverend Ray, and this is Tag Do About Your Dog and You, and our special guest on the second part of his life is Brother Jack Turner from Delaware, where our new president-elect, Mr. J. Joe Biden is from. And, boy, we're looking at 2021. We know it's going to be a little hard, but we're looking at it to be at least a springboard to something better. So as we bump out, we'll take it over to host with the Moses, Ms. Renee.
Thank you, Reverend Ray. We want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo Pet Store that's located in Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434. Back over to you, Reverend Ray, and our special guest, Jack Turner.
And let's give him a proper introduction once again.
Absolutely. Well, as Reverend Ray said, CAGDU is about all things related to working dogs. And today we're talking to Jack, getting a little background on who he is, the kind of person who usually goes to get a guide dog. And what we're going to talk about this second half is what happens when you lose your guide dog and how he copes with it.
All righty. We usually do Charlie's Corner at this point, but we're going to forego that today and get back to our special guest. And the question was repeated, Ms. Renee, that you wanted, Ms.
Do you have any?
I do.
Do you have any favorite stories from your work life?
Yes, kind of. As I had said to you guys on our previous visit, my original director was from North Carolina, and he was the racist from hell. So when the 74, I worked under his tenure from 68 to 79. But when the 74 amendments became a part of the program, that gave me the opportunity then to show who I really was. And so I really enjoyed, I think it was my greatest thrill, really, to be able to say what I wanted and needed to say to him without fear or reservations. Because, you know, back then, let me just be straight about this. Back then, if you were African American, you had to watch your tongue when you were talking to, when you were speaking to white people with authority, and especially coming from the world where he came from. So it gave me the thrill of a lifetime to be able to say the things that I needed and wanted to him before he left. He left in 79. But when the amendments came out, he made the statement after, because we had a year to review them and draft policy off of them before they went into effect. So when we reviewed them and drafted the policy and developed a committee, he said, "I won't be here long. I can't take this kind of stuff." So,
my.
Yeah. So he only stayed around another few years. But I gotta be honest with you, I gave him hell for those last few years.
I was trying to get even with an attitude.
Right. That was it. So I was trying to get even. But yeah, that's what my parents used to say to me, a blind man with attitude. How's that gonna work out?
So Jack, let me ask you this, because I know what it feels like, and sometimes you take it for granted when you can get people jobs and you have money coming across the counter that, you know, that you can invest or help other people and all of that. But for you, how did you feel when you left that I mean, you still have money in the bank and all of that and everything, but not supervising people anymore, not just being in the center of, you know, that kind of need of people coming to you. How was that for you moving on to your next chapter? Because I don't know what all you do now. I haven't heard of any other, because I know you're not with NFB like you used to. And I knew, and you tell us about this a little down the road about Renee. Jack was part of a with your mother. With Renee is from the UK, so her father was big in playing dots. And Jack and them, Renee, have an electric dot board. I never got up to to be able to play, and he'll tell you about that. But now, Jack, what is it? You know, your life, like, in terms of, I don't know, what your needs are and all that.
Well,
you know, you're not in that position.
Well, you know, when you do something for 44 years, there's a huge void when you no longer do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my wife worked. So I was here I spent a lot of time alone. Now, I am a person that can entertain myself. So
mm-hmm.
I don't experience a lot of loneliness. I enjoy music immensely. I listen to a lot of music, and I spent my days with music. I enjoy sports. I enjoy politics. So I was always able to entertain myself. But being away from the public, from the action, I think was the biggest, was the thing that I missed most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get used to seeing people on a daily basis. You know, you get to meet new people. And I think that was the thing that I missed most, was just not being around lots and lots of people. But, you know, it's like anything else. You adjust,
right.
You know.
Well,
and,
you know, I know you was in there for 44 years. Did you regret retiring, or what, did you feel it was time to move on?
Oh, it was definitely time to move on.
Okay.
After... I tell you when I knew it was time for me to move on. After 9/11, things changed a lot in terms of security, restrictions, how many people could come in the building, how tough it was to get in and out of the building. And so all of a sudden it became difficult to make the kind of money that I was used to making.
Mm-hmm.
So
so
I knew then that, you know what, it's going to be, I'm not going to be around as long as I have been.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I now, let me say this. I got divorced in 98. And I had planned to retire in 2000. But when you get divorced, that changes your plans a lot of times, you know, because trust me, divorce will mess with your money. So when I got divorced, that changed my plans.
Yeah, because then you worked another, 14 years, right?
Out of necessity, you know.
Okay.
It was a matter of making up for the wealth that I had to end up sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So,
mm-hmm.
I did another 14 years, and in the process, I got remarried again.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
I stayed single.
You stayed single for how long?
I stayed single for almost 8 years.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that long.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And
now, your wife is working now? She's still working, correct?
She retired in June. this past June.
Okay.
Now, Jack, yeah. So we're talking a little bit about personal life. I just want to ask you, you were blind all of your daughter's life. What was her reaction? How did she cope and manage your blindness?
You know, I'm really happy that you asked the question. Let me tell you, my daughter was remarkable in terms of the things that she was able to pick up just through observation. So here, let me tell you the thrill of my life. What happened was she was born in June. So her first Christmas, we gave her a lot of stuff. I mean, big Christmas because Christmas.
I can imagine. Yeah.
So that late, at the end of January that year, the January after her first Christmas, I was in her bedroom with her. We were playing around on the floor, and she had some rings that went to a particular toy, and we were tossing them back and forth to each other. And one of them got past me, and I didn't see it. So now here's a child that couldn't even talk yet. She was just starting to try to walk. She had crawling good, but just trying to walk. She comes over, takes my hand, and puts it on the ring.
Wow. Wow.
Which told me she knew that I couldn't see it.
Wow.
And it was a tearful moment. Because I knew then that we were gonna be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when she got older, she had a lot of questions. And when I say older, I mean 8, 9, 10 years old. She had a lot of questions because she was inquisitive. You know, she wanted to know about Braille and, you know, other things. How did it happen? What had I done about it, if anything? So, you know, she had those kind of questions. But our relationship was very normal. You know, now... I am a father who does not believe in physical punishment.
Mm-hmm.
I never spanked her once. Never touched her. Not even spanking her hands.
Wow.
I always, whenever she did something that was unacceptable, I always sat down with her and explained to her why it was unacceptable. I also explained to her how it made me feel when she disappointed me by doing something unacceptable. And it worked like magic.
And Jack, the words you use are powerful. Not that she was bad. Because, you know, bad connotation, you know, how that label us as black people. Unacceptable. I mean, and disappointed. Not she was mad with her, but disappointed. So just those words makes a difference. And that came where?
See,
that came from what? For you? That, where did that come from through you? Where did that come from? Is that the way your father treated you?
No. Both of my parents were from the South, from Tennessee.
They'll
break your arm if you try to run, and break your neck if you don't run. So
where did you get that philosophy from then?
Because I was anti physical punishment when I was a kid. I thought it was awful. I thought it was barbaric, and I promised if I ever had a child, I would never treat them like that.
Wow.
So, So that's where it came from, kind of self-taught. But let me tell you this. When you sit down with a child and explain to them why their behavior was unacceptable and how it made you feel as it relates to disappointment in them, it works like magic.
So, look, when we come back on the other side, I mean, I want to know, is your daughter married now? Does she have a family? Are you a grandpapa or whatever? So that's the music. This is Reverend Ray, and you're listening to CAGDU about your dog and you, and our very, very special guest, and with some philosophy and aspects of him that I never knew, is Brother Jack Turtle from Delaware. So, Ms. Renee, take it away, please.
You are listening to CAGDU about your dog and you. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we're located in the nation's capital. Our special guest is Jack Turner, retired business owner. He's going to share the loss of his seeing eye guide dog, Philly, and how he coped with Philly's loss. Back over to you, Reverend Ray, and our guest.
All right. So, first of all, Jack, your daughter, what is her name, and what is she doing now, and are you a grandpapa?
Okay, so let me, I will get to that, just, but let me just say this, too. I just wanted to complete the last thought. So
sure.
I knew early on that my relationship with her had to be built on trust, because she knew I was visually impaired. She knew that there was a lots of things she could get away with that I wouldn't be able to see. So I knew that the strength of our relationship had to be trust.
Wow.
So I always trusted her and always insisted that, well, not insist, but always tried to encourage her to trust me. So when she did something unacceptable, there was no screaming and yelling and hitting and punishing, and we talked it out.
Wow.
And so she knew that the only price she was going to pay is to have to listen to maybe a lecture or understand how disappointed Dad was. So now to get to your question, though, yeah, my daughter is married. She lives in Silver Springs.
Silver Spring what?
Maryland.
Oh, I didn't know she lived down here.
Yeah, she lives down
okay.
there in Silver Springs.
Wow.
She works for a company called, and Renee, you may have heard of it too, Ray. She works for a company called Booz Allen.
Yes, Booz Allen.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she works. That's who she works for. Her daughter goes to Bullis High School. My granddaughter. I have a granddaughter. She goes to Bullis High School. I think it's an academy or something. I don't know, but you guys probably know it.
I know it. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So and her husband is a college recruiter. He's from Massachusetts. She met him in college.
And what's her name? What college did they go to?
Her name is Lanye. Her name is Lanye Turner. Turner.
Where did that come from?
She went to Harvard.
It's Harvard. Yeah, it's a French, kind of a French name. And I met a lady from Belgium. And this is when my first wife was pregnant. And she says to me, oh, what are you going to name your baby? I said, well, I don't know yet, because I don't know if it's a boy or girl. She says, well, if it's a girl, name her Lanye.
That sounds wonderful, doesn't it? Yes.
Yeah. So I said, well, you know what? I've never heard that name before. So if it's a girl, I'll keep that in mind. So that's how she ended up with her name.
It's
but
a
anyway,
beautiful name.
She met her husband in school. he worked at Harvard at the time while she was in, when she was a student. And when she graduated from Harvard, she worked. She went to work for Harvard for a couple years. Then she moved to D.C. Actually, she went to work for Georgetown University. She got her master's from Georgetown, and she wasn't satisfied with that. So she went back while she was working for Georgetown and got an MBA. So, she's really ambitious, kind of like her dad. Really ambitious.
Well, I was going to say that. So that business streak runs through there. Listen, we have been promising our listeners for 2 hours that you are going to talk about Philly. So I'm going to turn it over to Reverend Ray to handle that.
So,
this is a little bit delicate.
Yeah, let's do
but
that.
But one of the things that Reverend says, and I think it's really important, we can look up anything on the Internet, but it's a very sterile definition. What we have heard today is a fuller picture of a dad, a business person, and a man who's seen some troughs in his life. Divorce is not easy. And so I appreciate you sharing that. But we're going to take it to a different note. Can't say a lighter note, but we're going to take it to a different note. And Reverend Ray, you've experienced the loss of a few dogs. And we're going to run a little bit over our regular time so we can get the story of Philly in. So, Reverend, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. So, Jack, like I said, you know that I have gone through a few dogs. And matter of fact, my sixth dog.
And a few wives.
And a few wives. Yeah, throw that in.
Okay.
So Jack, now on you having your first dog, and I think it was a couple of years ago. Yeah, because I lost my dog right after you lost your dog. I think that was a couple months after.
Yeah, a couple months
and
after.
So that's a couple of years now. So, you expressed to me, and I know how much you love that dog. Like I say, you're one of them people that I was saying about don't be, treating it. Remember, it's a dog, and you have the finances to make sure the dog got the best. And that dog got the best. Philly got the best of everything, Reed, everything. But Jack, two things I want to know. One, the way that you treated your dog, how did your wife adjust to that? Or was it even an issue with her in terms of the way your bonding and relationship with her?
Well, let me say this. I think she really loved him too. Now, not like I did, but she loved him. She was extremely fond of him. The only issue that she may have had, and I say may have had because she never really said a lot about it, but I think she was, there were moments when she thought I was maybe spending too much money on him, overdoing it, but since it was mine, it didn't matter because... it was a decision that I made, and that was part of how I felt about him. So, she never. But let me say this: she never got in the way of it. She never tried to prevent me. Yeah, but I could tell there were moments when she thought, "Boy, that's a lot of money for whatever."
I do know.
Jack, let me jump in here. No, let me jump in here. Reverend Ray is basing that on an experience that we had. I had never lived with dogs, and when he bought the dog home, I was told that I couldn't interact with the dog because it was important for him to set up a bond, and I understood that. And so our anniversary was in February, and while he's still at the school, I get this box from what was the name of the company, Raymond?
Chewy.
No,
it was like I love and kisses. That's what it was. So I opened the box. He's up at the school. Hugs and kisses. I opened the box and it's something for the dog. It wasn't even for me. It was our anniversary. I couldn't.
Oh my!
I had a hard time with. And so that's why he is. I was a little jealous, not so much of the spending of the money, and that was important, and I want to talk about vet bills and insurance and that kind of thing, but it was just that I couldn't interact, and I knew it intellectually, but emotionally, I had a little bit of a hard time. So I'm going to let you get back, but it was hugs and kisses, and it was not
Jack,
a good for me.
Bad timing, Ray.
I know. When you was at Maryland School for the Blind, a couple of things I noticed about you. One, I didn't think of you as a dog person, that's for sure, and maybe you've been. But the other thing was you did not suffer fools, and you was very close and when it comes to friends. You didn't just call a person a friend just for the sake of calling friends. I know your circle of friends was very, very well chosen. And so
yeah.
when you decided to get a dog and got a dog, and like I said, I know your relationship is very bonding. So did you realize you were going to bond as close as you did with Philly?
Not even close. I mean, listen. I've had dogs all my life from a kid, but actually since I've been married, I've had a couple German Shepherds and a Rottweiler.
Mm-hmm.
But I always saw them as a pet, a dog pet.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
they were never what I felt like was special. I mean, more than a dog, more
yeah.
than a pet. Philly was like a child to me. He was like my son almost. Like I treated him like I would have treated a son if I had a son. He was so special and so important. And I tell you, it took me almost 2 years to get to a point where I could talk about him without tearing up. And
mm-hmm.
even now, occasionally, I'll tear up because he meant that much to me. He was so special, and he did things for and with me that I didn't think was possible for a dog
wow.
to do. You know? Listen, my wife always went to bed early. So she goes to bed like 8, 9 o'clock. And, of course, I understood it because she worked. I stay up till 12, 11, sometimes 1, depending on what kind of sports I'm into or whatever, or what I'm reading. Now, my normal was to go about 11. So she would try to get Philly to come and go up because he slept in our bedroom. She'd try to get him to come up and go up with her sometimes. And he'd go up with her just to please her. And then as soon as she got into bed, he'd sneak back downstairs where I was. and let me tell you, now, I might be watching a football game or a basketball game, and sometimes he'd be in the front room or another room looking out the window or whatever he's doing or even napping. But about 11 o'clock, he would come to where I was as if to say, "You ready to go to bed, old man? It's about that time. About time for us to go to bed." I mean, he was just so special.
I know. And let me ask you this. Bob Lewis
Philly?
Called.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear both of you.
I'm sorry. How old was Philly, and how long had you had him? And did he get sick, or was he just so
Yeah, I got him when he was 22 months. And he died. He turned 7 in June, and he died the following October.
Now, were there any signs that he was ill?
No. Let me tell you what happened. One day when my wife came home, she says, I think there's something wrong with his leg. And I said, why? I didn't feel anything. She said, I said, which leg? She says, his left front leg. I said, well, why do you say that? She said, he kind of limps on it a little bit. Well, you know what happened the next day. I'm at the vet.
See what
the hell's going on here. So
right.
They did all kinds of x-rays and exams, and she couldn't find anything wrong. And she says, no, I don't know what it's from. And maybe he had his foot was sore from stepping on something or whatever, but I can't see anything wrong. Our x-rays are not showing anything wrong. So only other thing I could say is you can get an ultrasound, and that'll go a little bit further in terms of detailing whether anything may be wrong. So I said, well, where do I go? So we did the ultrasound, and the radiologist says to me at the time, I don't really see anything wrong, but there's a little shadow on the inner side of his liver. Mm-hmm. And I said, what you talking about, Willis? Because I'm getting ready to get upset. So he said, I don't think it's anything, but I just want you to know what I see. Okay. So this was like May. Everything seemed to be fine then. We went through spring, went through summer, no problem. I noticed early fall, I have a deck on the back of my house, and we sit out there. And in the evenings, when she came home from work after dinner, the three of us would sit out there, you know, and talk and listen to music and whatever. And occasionally, I mean, he would go down and play in the yard or whatever. And occasionally him and her would play ball. But I noticed in the fall, he started showing a desire not to go down in the yard, only when he had to relieve himself. He'd go down, relieve himself, and come right back on the deck, sit down. And I'm like, what's this is about? You know, because he was a rabbit chaser and a squirrel chaser and, you know, a dog chaser. He started not wanting to go down in the yard. And I'm like, boy, this is different. And I don't know if it's that he's starting to age or if he's not feeling well. So I called the vet, told her what was happening. She says, okay, we'll bring him in. We'll check him out. So we went, couldn't find anything. So then in October, well, my wife came home one Friday evening, and she says, and he wanted to go out. I have a bell on the door that he could ring. So he rang the bell. He wanted to go out. So I thought maybe, and he always got excited when she came home, but this particular day he didn't. So he rang the bell, he wanted to go out, so I told her, go ahead and let him out. And he went down in the yard, and he sat down, and he was like weaving from left to right, like he was in pain. Mm-hmm. And she said, something's wrong with Philly. I'm busted out the door, what you talking? I bust out the door, down the steps. What's the matter, buddy? And I'm hugging him, and he's like kind of whimpering just a bit. Not bad, but just, you know, like, you know, I'm hurting. So I called a vet, and, of course, they were about to close, so I had to take him to emergency. We went to emergency. She did a x-ray. And she said, oh, he's got some internal. I'm going to tell you exactly what she said. She said, oh, his organs are full of blood.
Oh, my.
I said, what? I'm yelling and screaming. They thought I was losing my mind. She says, he's got some internal bleeding from somewhere. I said, well, you better find out. So she said, well, we had to do an x-ray. I said, well, go ahead, whatever. Do whatever it takes. So she x-rayed him and she says, well, he's got some internal bleeding, and I think it's from his liver. I don't think. Find out. So she said, well, I don't have a ultrasound tech here right now, and the only way I could find out is call an ultrasound tech to I said, well, call him. She said, well, I don't know if I could get one of this stuff. I said, listen, you call him and tell him whatever he wants to charge, I'm willing to pay. Get here.
Wow.
So she called all over. She found one in Philly in Philadelphia that worked for the University of Pennsylvania. So he says, I can be there in an hour. So we waited. He came down. He did an ultrasound. And I'm on pins and needles. I'm pacing back and forth. I'm crying. I'm upset. I'm mistreating people. I'm losing my mind. And finally he came back and he said, well, Mr. Turner, I wish I had better news for you. I said, how bad is it? He said, well, he has liver cancer. He said, the shadow that your radiologist saw the last time was the beginning of it.
Wow.
I was just devastated. I said, okay, how do we fix this? He said, well, we can do surgery, and if it's on the inside, which I can't tell right now, we can clip that off, and we can try to clip it off depending on how much it is, and he could live with that. And I said, if it's not, he said, well, if it's not, then we only have about a 30% chance.
My goodness, wow.
So I said, so from your trained eye, give it to me straight. Where do you think it is? He said, well, I don't want to say. I said, well, your silence tells me everything.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, I know you're upset. I said, I am more than upset. So he said, well, it's a low percentage. But if you want to do it, we can do it. I said, well, when you say low percentage, what? What is that? Give it to me in numbers. He said, at best, 30%. So I said, so what does 30% mean in terms of lifespan? He said, you could get anywhere from, this is post-surgery. You could get anywhere from 3 weeks to 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So I said, look, I need you to be devastatingly honest with me. How much pain is Philly in? He said, he's in enough pain where he will never get comfortable.
Oh my.
So I went outside in the car and cried for about a half an hour. I asked God why. I ask her to please help me through this. Show me what to do. And I came back. When I came back in, I told my wife, I said, listen, I can't stand the thought of Philly being in pain. So I'm going to let him go. That thing hurt me so bad. And you have to forgive me.
No,
I know you can
no,
hear it in my voice.
Yeah, I understand.
It hurt me so bad. I don't think I ever experienced that kind of pain in my entire life.
Wow.
Listen, I have lost friends, wives, relatives, pets, you name it. Never anything, the loss of anything, compared to the loss of Philly.
What do you think made Philly's death different?
Well, I think because he was so special and so smart and did so many things with and for me. And also, we were together all the time, you know. He didn't work a lot because after I got him, I didn't do a lot. I mean, I was on a council for the blind and some other organizations. So I always took him to meetings with me, and I did some consulting work, and I would take him with me, but it was not on a daily basis. So he didn't do a lot of work, but he was with me 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
But he was so easy to train, and he understood so much. And, you know, I could say to him, come on, Philly, let's get your groom on. He knew exactly what I meant. He'd go right to the garage door every time. And, you know, at about 5 o'clock or so, he would start pacing because he knew it was time for her to come home.
Mm-hmm.
We had a clock that had bird sounds on the hour. Had to get rid of it because when the 5 o'clock bell went off, or 5 o'clock bird went off, he went off. So, but now let me share a couple things with you that, and Ray's had dogs before, so he might believe it, but I know it's going to be a little difficult for you probably, Renee, to believe it. But when we walk in a building, I could say to Philly, find the elevator. And his head would be going 90 miles an hour back and forth, up and down, until he spotted an elevator. He would pull me over to it, put his nose right on the button. Now, that's the honest truth.
Oh, yeah, no, Renee's seen it.
We go in the doctor. Now, I taught him this myself. We go in the doctor's office, just me and him. I'd go to the window and log in. I'd say, find a seat. And he'd go to an empty chair.
Yeah. No,
I mean.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And listen.
So let me ask you this. Go ahead.
And listen, when we got to a stairwell, he would put his front paws on the first step, up or down, to let me know whether we're going up or down.
Yeah.
Now, he's the first guide dog I ever seen do that.
Yeah. No, they're all different. They got different personalities, and that's the thing.
Yeah, they do.
Lovely personalities, and, you know, and it's hard to accept the second one around there. Now, with my first, I had these problems, and let me ask you, are you still dealing with it? The toys and the things that you have with Philly, do you still have them?
Oh, man, listen, I got rid of those things so fast. I think the next day I had a couple, things you throw trash in. What do you call them? Dumpsters.
Dumpster?
I had a couple dumpsters. Yeah, I had a couple dumpsters of trash.
Mm-hmm.
Things to get rid of. Hmm. And after I did it, I said, boy, that was stupid. I could have given them to somebody that could use them. But I was angry.
Yeah.
So that's what caused that. Now, I don't know if
you
could hear.
I think that's important for our listeners to hear, because they do not go gently into the good night. It is hard, and you are sharing at a gut level that we have never had anybody share about the loss. They'll mention the loss of their dog, but they have not dissected it the way you have. And I think that that's really important, that you were angry, and I get that.
Listen, I experience the entire gamut of human emotion. I was angry. I was mad. I mean, I was mad. I was devastated. I was lost. I was depressed. I mean, I could go on and on, but I'll just say I experienced the entire gamut of loss with the experience
of losing
him.
How long has Philly been gone? How long has Philly been gone?
It was two years in October.
Okay, and this may be indelicate, but I apologize. Will you get another guide dog?
Well, let me tell you this. I thought that was not in the cards for me, because I knew that there was no dog on the planet that could ever compare to Philly. And being totally honest with you, I also feel like there is a special place in my heart for him that no other dog could penetrate. Now, let me say this. We have a six-month-old chocolate lab. It's my wife's dog, but I say we because, you know, we all live here together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's what she wanted, let me put it that way. And she is wonderful. I mean, she's not going to be a guide dog because I'm not doing that. But she's a pet, and she spends most of her time with my wife. But her and I are friends, we're buddies, and we spend, you know, good times together. But, you know, when it comes to the love thing, it's not even close.
Reverend Ray, we are running out of time. I'm sure you want to get a couple more questions in here.
Okay, so we're going to, all right, so we're going to, it just so taken me back, Jack, from my first dogs and just the transition of having another, you know, getting another dog. Like you say, that place in your heart, it's just hard to believe that, you know, that it can have the same relationship again. And the dog I have now, Raven, is probably the smartest guide dog I ever had of all the seven dogs. And,
really?
And yeah. She is a coated shepherd, beautiful shepherd. There are like only 3 or 5% of all shepherds born are coated shepherds. So she has extra long hair, ears a little bigger, and very intelligent eyes, and extremely intelligent. And they taught her how to relieve herself in a bag. Okay.
Yeah, you told me that.
Yeah,
I thought that was
really
incredible.
It is incredible. But we are going to close out, Jack. And I really, believe me, appreciate it. Because when Bob Lewis called me, because you know he know everybody's business, and he said, Jack Turner, get the dog. I said, Jack Turner, who? I said, it must have something to do with money, Bob. If Jack Turner, I said, get the dog. It has something to do with money. I said, he done worked some angle. Jack said the only thing that he ever lost that hurt him, the next thing that would be his money. Okay.
That was my mantra.
I know. But Jack, I so appreciate the two hours that we have spent with you, and thank your wife. What's your wife's name again?
Anita.
Anita, and thank her for the time you have spent with us, because we don't take for granted people's time. And we wish you a Merry Christmas. And when all this is over with this COVID, we really look forward to coming up and spending some time with y'all. And I really, really appreciate it. We'll get to talk special again about the dots, the electric dots. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
we will talk to you again. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate you having me. I hope I gave you guys what you needed.
Oh, wow.
I apologize.
More than what we thought.
I apologize for getting a little bit upset at the end.
Oh,
there.
No, man.
But,
don't apologize. Like you say, with money, that sells, right, Rick? Whatever bleeds and whatever sells.
Yeah.
Whatever bleeds. But
well, trust me,
right,
it was real.
And that's what came across to our listeners.
Yeah.
Because as Reverend
yeah.
Ray says, you can
good.
Look up
yeah.
about losing a dog, and it means nothing. You put it in a human context and an emotional context. So we thank you for opening yourself up to our listeners.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well,
so
look, you guys stay
okay.
safe. Happy holidays.
Right.
And
you,
hopefully when COVID is gone, we'll be able to get together.
Most definitely. Okay, that's a promise.
Most definitely.
All right. Okay.
Take care.
Thank
and stay
all
safe.
Right. Okay. So, Ms. Renee, we want to close a little different. So, we got one more show before the year's out, and we're hoping that show is going to be the day after Thanksgiving. We usually have our Razor Robinson Sewell family holiday, Thanksgiving holiday show. Where we have our kids, our sons and daughters, talk about their thanks, past Thanksgiving and what they're thankful for. And we want to start a new tradition, we hope, with the Razor Sewell Robinson family, that our grandchildren talk about what Christmas means to them. So next Friday, please join us, and that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to have, hopefully, the United Young People are. But hopefully we are going to have our granddaughters, our one grandson. We're probably going to have his parents as his representative to interpret his Googles, what Christmas, his first Christmas going to mean, his second Christmas going to mean to him. So join us next week. And Ms. Renee, any closing things you have to say just before Christmas?
No, I think that you've said it all. Jack really opened up our hearts and left us in a very tender spot, and that's a good thing, and it's right for this season.
Yeah.
So should I close this out in the usual way?
You close out in the usual way, and I'll close out in the usual way in saying, this is Reverend Ray, and you've been listening to CAGDU about your dog and you, and as I always like to say, hug your honey, but pet your pooch.
You have been listening to CAGDU about your dog and you, Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email address is cagdu2020@gmail.com. At CAGDU2020@gmail.com, or give us a call at 301-263-7371. And again, that number is 301-263-7371. 1-800-273-8871. Happy holidays to you, and we'll see you here Christmas Day, December 25th, 2020.